The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, thanks for joining us on SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio as we continue along on a Monday. We've got eight more games in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. How did we get here? How did we get to this point? Well, chalk. Chalk prevailed. There are two stories, though, from over the weekend that I want to get to involving games and players. The first one, Fletcher McGee out of Wofford. He went 0-for-12 from the three-point line. That's tough. I mean, especially when you set the record for most threes, you electrify in the opening round game with 7 3-pointers. You play Kentucky and you know you're going to need to be able to shoot. You know you're going to be able to need to get 3-pointers. And they can't get any from their sharpshooter, the guard, the senior guard, ending his career at Wofford in an 0-for-12 night. How do you imagine that going, finishing it out and just ending your career on an 0-for-12 night against Kentucky? When any one of those, and he said this, if I get three of those, if I'm 3-for-12 from the three-point line, you know, we could have changed the course of the game. It is sad, but there is a belief in basketball that shooters have to shoot their way out of slumps. And I've always challenged that in certain one-and-done situations, because in one-and-done situations, if you're in a slump and you're struggling, there's no tomorrow. You either get it or figure it out, or you don't. But in this situation, that is accurate. Fletcher McGee had to shoot his way out of this. He had to shoot and keep shooting. That was the only way Wofford was going to win this game. They needed to see if he could get himself out of this. I remember in 1994, John Starks of the Knicks was just clanging the ball off the rim in the game 7 against the Rockets in the NBA finals. And the title of the New York Post the next day was clang, clang, clang went the title, because all it focused on was Starks missing and missing and missing and missing. And the excuse was shooters need to shoot their way out of slumps. But in that situation with the Knicks, there's no tomorrow, find another option. Wofford didn't have another option. This is how you beat Kentucky. You shoot from the outside. And so Fletcher McGee had to shoot his way out of the slump, but the slump decided to stay with him in that game against the Wildcats. The other story, and I'm going to get to in a minute, involved Tennessee and how they beat Iowa in overtime by who didn't play. That's coming up next, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, SB Nation AM rolling along. All right, so one of the other stories out of the tournament that I wanted to share was what happened in the Tennessee-Iowa game. So Tennessee, the number second-ranked team, it could have been a number one seed if they had beaten Auburn in the SEC title game. Spent some weeks at number one in the nation. Rick Barnes has had a team that people even like me, you've probably heard me say it over and over again, was Tennessee championship good? I mean, I've used that term a lot because that's the only way I can really describe it. I've seen them a number of times this year. There were times where they looked great and looked dominant, but I always had to kind of weigh that with, yeah, but is this North Carolina good? Like when they play like a North Carolina or a Duke or somebody else, are they going to be able to? That was what I saw translating to a win in that series. So they were up by 25. Iowa came back. The game went into overtime. And Admiral Schofield, who's like the second best player on the team. There's Grant Williams is the first. He led the conference in scoring. And then there's Admiral Schofield. And the two go kind of hand in hand. But Admiral Schofield didn't play at all in the overtime. And so after the game, Rick Barnes was asked about this because, you know, hey, listen, you're missing Admiral Schofield. Why? And he said he did not want to play. And now the story comes out that it's not that he didn't want to play because he was frustrated or angry. He had realized Kyle Alexander was playing better than he was and that he was not going to add any more than what Kyle Alexander was going to add. And he needed out of the game because the team played better with Alexander rather than him. That's a really odd thing for a young man to believe, like to see and to have the sort of fortitude to be able to say, you know what, I'm seeing this on a larger level than just myself. I wonder how many basketball players had ever thought that about any moment of any game. Because I can see the critics now saying, no, you got to grind. Like, you got to be competitive. You got to want that. That's got to be yours. You got to go get that. But then there's guys who, like me, who will say, wait a minute. That's one of the smartest things a player can do. It's to realize it's not their day. It's not their game. And so the reason I compare this with Fletcher McGee is because in Fletcher McGee's case, after, let's say, the first six misses from the three-point line, he could have easily said, hey, coach, look, I know the other night I was knocking everything I saw, not everything I saw, but for whatever reason, I'm not seeing it. I'm not feeling it. The ball's not coming off my hand in the same way. We better find another way to score because this is not working for me. But he didn't, and the reason he didn't was because he was the game plan. In terms of beating Kentucky, you weren't going to beat Kentucky in the paint, and you weren't going to beat Kentucky by trying to drive through the lane. They were too good defensively. You have to beat Kentucky if you're Wofford by outside shots and maybe forcing Kentucky out defensively. Maybe you can exploit a little bit of that, but even that's a challenge, right? I mean, listen, Wofford was in the top 25, okay? I mean, I'm not trying to knock their season. But when you play SoCon teams week in and week out in your conference schedule and you go up against one of the premier teams in the country that's going to guard you different with more athletes and better athletic ability, you got to find your thing that works for you. And the thing that works for Wofford is they hit their outside shots. They hit their perimeter shots. And Fletcher McGee is the reason why. For Admiral Schofield of Tennessee to say, we're a better team with me not on it today, I think it's very admirable, and I think is a real example of somebody who thought a larger picture than of himself. Because part of being a successful athlete is being a little selfish. It's not always being about, you know, I'm 100% for the team. If you are an athlete, you want that moment. You want to capitalize on that moment. You want to have enough confidence in yourself that you know that when called upon, you are the guy or the gal. It takes somebody that goes even beyond that to say, listen, if I'm on the court and Kyle isn't on the court, we could lose this game. And I have to understand that today he's better than I am. He's better than I am. And I may have only said that once or twice throughout the whole season, but that doesn't matter. Today it matters. And an understanding of what was on the line for this game. And again, I was talking about this in the last hour. The finality of this tournament is what makes it so appealing, right? the finality of this tournament is what leads to upsets, because there are no matter how you blend college athletes together, and you like Mike Krzyzewski can be in this tournament forever and have all the successful teams and can coach his butt off and all of those things. But in reality, his players have to be on the court executing. His players are the ones that get nerves at the free throw line, not Mike Krzyzewski. He can do whatever he can to train them for the moment, but when push comes to shove, it's the kids on the court that make the decisions as to what they're going to do at any critical moment of the game. And you hope you've coached them well. You hope that you've coached them so that they make the right decision. But in reality, sometimes they don't. Sometimes the nerves get to them. Sometimes for the first time that they feel, hey, man, there's some adversity here and I'm getting challenged and this is it. And you know what? If we lose this game, it's over. If we lose this game, we're going home. We're packing up. That's it. We're done. My career is done, or the season at least is done. You know, for Zion Williamson, that's it. If he loses to UCF, that's it. And so Admiral Schofield of Tennessee, I got to give him a lot of credit because he saw that. He saw the finality of what they built all year long. Listen, the is Tennessee championship good question? Because I live in Nashville, I hear it more than maybe you hear it, but I've heard it all season long, and I know they have too. I know they have too. It is hard. I'm sorry. It is hard to take any SEC school seriously as a national championship contender outside of Kentucky. Florida got to do it for a little bit, and they were, you know, in contention. Mississippi State had its little moments a couple of years ago. There have been teams that have, you know, from the SEC that have made strong presence in the tournament, but the conference's depth has always been questioned. The quality of play has always been questioned. I mean, look, the SEC ain't producing three number one seeds like the ACC is, right? The SEC is playing basketball. There were years where it's unwatchable basketball. So is Tennessee very good? Is they championship good? That's a question that has been hovering around this program all year. He acknowledged that. He knew that. Listen, everything that we've done, everything that we've built upon, all the wins, the time at number one, the time we lost on the road, the time we got walloped here, or the time we lost to Auburn in the SEC championships, all of these things, they're all on the line if we lose to Iowa. Not only are we going to lose to Iowa, we are going to lose to Iowa in a historic moment, because Iowa is going to come back from 25 points down to win this game if we don't win it. And I'm going to sit out because we are not a better team with me on the floor. I got to tell you, I'm on the side that says Admiral Schofield should be admired for this. Admired for this. Not, well, that's where athletes get the gut check from. When they realize they can, they go out and do it. No. Because if he went out there and they took Kyle Alexander out and he went out there and he didn't produce, or he was playing the way he was playing, to realize that I'm not playing well, but I'm going to go out there anyway, that team is done and it's over and that's it. The book is written. These seniors that have built this program up will end in the second round of the NCAA tournament. And guess what? Everything that had been said about them, all of the conversation about whether or not Tennessee is championship good, is answered. They weren't. And that's not how they want to be. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I'm glad he did it. And I'm glad that Rick Barnes pointed this out and was able to say, yeah, my guy, listen, he don't want to play, because right now, that moment in the game, he realized another teammate was more productive than he was and needed to be out on the court. So like I said, Fletcher McGee, no, the doesn't apply to him. Fletcher McGee of Wofford doesn't apply. Shoot your way out of slump. Get out there on the floor. Shoot 23 pointers if you have to get out of it. But that's the only way you beat Kentucky. And unfortunately, he went 0-for-12. I wish it wasn't this case. I wish it wasn't the story. I wish he had made 5 or 6 or 7 of them. Hate that he goes out on that. I hate it, because he's one of the best 3-point shooters in the history of college basketball. And his last game was an 0-for against Kentucky in a loss. But Admiral Schofield, different. Don't shoot your way out of it, young man. Find the guy that can. Get out of that game. If you know you're a detriment to your team, we all have bad days. Look, every sport is the same. Every sport has it. There are golfers who miss the cut, you know, shoot 77, 77, go, I don't know, just one of those weeks. Get out of here. Go back home, relax, come back next week to compete. Kentucky's got a tomorrow because Admiral Schofield said, I can't do it today. That's an amazing accomplishment. For a young man, that's an amazing accomplishment. And his People in Tennessee will remember that. People in volunteer program remember that, especially if they make a run. If they get to the Final Four or they make any sort of big run in this tournament, they'll remember Admiral Schofield, his selfless act of not playing in overtime against Iowa. All right, 800-777-2907 on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. All right, coming up, we'll get more into the life of Rob Gronkowski. He announced his retirement, some other NFL news and notes, including Antonio Brown said what to the Buffalo Bills? Oh, we'll have that for you. Plus, Johnny Manziel in the AAF. Did you watch? Because I'll tell you what he did next on SB Nation Radio.
This is Mike Fers from Let's Talk Wheels. You're brought to you by our friends at Jeep. Got a tip today for allergy sufferers. The filters on your car or truck play a big role in the life of your engine and your comfort. We know about the air filter, but there's another filter that's really important this time of year, and it's your cabin filter. Spring has sprung, and that means that everything is blooming. Here in Texas, the pine trees cover our cars with a yellow pollen that drives allergy sufferers crazy. Add in the high levels of mold and ragweed that the weather guy warns you about, and if you don't have allergies, you will soon. You're driving with it blowing in your face. A few years ago, automakers realized the problem and added a filter to your AC system that works the same as the one on your home AC. The cabin filter cleans the air before it gets to you, and it really works. But it'll only help if you change it at least once a year. And this is the time to do it. And it's easy to do. This is Mike Herzum, Let's Talk Wheels. We're brought to you by our great friends at Jeep. For more tips, go to letstalkwheels.com. That's letstalkwheels.com.
Each spring, we lose an hour of sleep in the name of daylight savings time. But who needs rest when you've got a new Jeep SUV? Come in to the Jeep Freedom Days sales event now for great deals that more than make up for 60 minutes of not snoozing. Go anywhere, anytime in the legendary Jeep Wrangler, Motor Trend's 2019 SUV of the year. Travel in luxurious comfort with Jeep Grand Cherokee, the most awarded SUV ever. Take in more fresh air in Jeep Compass with its available panoramic dual-pane sunroof. And push your adventures to new lengths with Jeep Cherokee's 31 MPG highway. So hurry in for great deals at the Jeep Freedom Days sales event, or you'll miss out on more than just an hour of rest. Jeep Grand Cherokee has received more awards over its lifetime than any other SUV. EPA estimated 4-cylinder 4x2. Actual mileage may vary. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, Shelby Mast is going to join us in 10 minutes. Bracketologist for USA Today. We'll talk some college hoops with him now that we're down to the Sweet 16. You can now earn O Rewards points online at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. Earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You'll receive a $5 reward for every 150 points that you earn. Visit orewards.com and become an O'Reilly All Rewards member. And O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, I got to get this Johnny Manziel stuff out of the way because Johnny Manziel made his Alliance of American Football debut on Sunday. By the way, in case you were wondering, the score, Memphis over Birmingham, 31-25. Manziel was 3 for 5 for 48 yards with 2 rushes totaling 20 yards. But the home fans were chanting, "We want Johnny" in the game when he was on the sidelines. When Brandon Silvers was starting the game for the Express, that must have felt nice. He did have a 36-yard pass, but the drive stalled in the end zone. I wanted to see it, but I'd missed it. Johnny Manziel making his debut in the AAF. I hope it works out for him. Good luck.
I do, too.
I do, too.
Yeah,
I
want
Johnny
why not?
To be successful.
Have him be the face of Memphis.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. But I hear his wife is divorcing him or she's leaving him or something.
They're having a rough patch, as the kids would say.
She took his name off of her Instagram account or something.
And the photos. Don't forget.
And the photos.
Got to get rid of all the photos. All evidence.
Yep, took that down. Yeah. Get rid of all that. So probably heading for Divorceville, Johnny Manziel. Ooh, really? I mean, stop.
Shocking.
But yeah, shocking is right. But anyway, Memphis beat Birmingham 31-25. I don't even know the standings of this anymore. I was following it, then I lost track.
I don't either.
I got to get back into it.
I think Orlando is winning.
I think Orlando is doing really well. The only reason I know that is I have a friend of mine who lives in Florida, former media guy in Colorado, now living in Florida, and he's always posting about this team. And here's the weird thing. Can I tell you something weird about it?
Yes.
He's on Facebook. He's got a pretty good. He does an online show in Florida. I think it's in Ocala, near where my parents live. And he's an older guy, so he's got kind of a following. He's got one of those Facebook accounts that's got a lot of friends on it. But here's the thing that is intriguing. He will post things like, that was a tough call against the Apollos, whatever. And he's got people responding to it. Like people going, well, that guy should have done this, or that guy, or they should have played him more. And I'm like, this might be the only social media thread where there's an actual conversation about the strategy going on in an AAF game. Like people are really like, oh man, he should have played this guy, should have played that guy. Spurrier should have done this, or Spurrier should have done that. I'm like, really? Guys, come on. Let's give this a few years to sort of, you know, ferment before we start criticizing this.
They're clearly on top of the league right now. They are 6-1.
Wow.
But
okay.
Here's the real kicker, because they actually have this listed. I'm not sure why, but they actually have their point differential. And they are right now plus 97.
Oh, okay.
Everyone else,
so they're really doing well.
Yeah, everyone else who is in the positive, they're in the 20s.
Oh, okay.
So they are really killing everybody out. Yeah.
God. Okay.
Now the last place team. I mean, there's three teams that are 2-5. One being your Memphis Express.
Yeah, that's right.
But if we're going off a point differential being kind of what the tiebreaker kind of separates them all, that would be the Atlanta Legends, who are posting a minus 117 in their point differential.
Okay,
so they're not having a good time.
God, I can't wait till Spurrier wins the championship and angers Gator fans by saying this is the greatest accomplishment of his career.
There you go.
Well, I did a lot of things in my career, but winning this championship with the inaugural season, probably the number one thing I've ever done in my career. And Gator fans are like, what? What's wrong with you? Ah, just kidding. Better than South Carolina, though. Just leaves. I love Spurrier so much. I got to be honest with you. I love him so much. That Thanksgiving with my in-laws, when he announced he was going to coach at South Carolina, was one of the greatest 3 days in the history of my life.
I can only imagine. I mean, you got a Florida household.
Oh, and they came into Colorado for Thanksgiving that year. And I was totally trolling them. Like we'd sit at the dinner table and I'd be like, can you pass the Spurrier? I mean, stuffing. I meant stuffing. I'm sorry. Did I say Spurrier? I meant stuffing. Oh God. I mean, it was awesome. It was so great. And they, of course, were like, Urban who? What's this Urban Meyer guy? He's going to be the coach. I don't even know Urban. And he turns out to be one of the greatest coaches in Florida history. But I had told him that. I told both of my mother and father-in-law. I said, you're going to like this guy. He's at Utah. We live in the Mountain West. I cover the Mountain West. You're going to like this guy. And they're like, I don't even know who he is.
So now, random thought now, because you brought his name up. In the Desiri household, who lays claim to Spurrier?
My wife does.
I mean, because obviously because he won championships there.
Yeah, my wife does. And I've always fought this because, because he's won titles there. But here's where she does, because he came back and he went right back to, like, when he got back, he left South Carolina. He walked away from South Carolina in, like, late in the season. Like, he didn't even finish the season. And then he went to Florida and became, now he works there as like an advisor on the, like he does this Apollos thing on the side, but he's like an ambassador and he represents Florida and a lot of things. So he's back at the school, but that's why she claims. But I mean, I consider him the greatest South Carolina football coach in the history of the school.
I didn't realize. I mean,
so, he, I mean,
he was pretty close to equaling the time he spent at Florida.
Yeah, he did. He was there for a long time. I mean, he got there in 2005 to
2015. Yeah. I mean, he was there for 11 years in Florida and looks like 10 years in South Carolina. So
yeah, I mean, absolutely. That, completely, right? But he just never won a championship at South Carolina. He won two with the Gators.
Man, the only thing he ever did at South Carolina was an SEC Eastern Division title.
Actually, I'm sorry. I think he only won one with Florida. He only won one. I'm sorry. He played in two because he played in a game. They played at the Fiesta Bowl, and Danny Werfel was playing, and they were playing Nebraska, and they were peeling. I kid you not. And I don't mean this like figuratively, like in like hyperbole. They were peeling Danny Werfel off of the grass in that game against Nebraska. Like literally peeling him off the grass. Nebraska ran over Florida. That was Lawrence Phillips. He got suspended and he got to play again. They killed the Gators in that game. But then Florida won the national championship, I think, the following year in 1996. So, nope, she does. Spurrier. Gotta love him. But he's leading the Apollos in the AAF. But he doesn't have Johnny Manziel. That belongs to Memphis. All right, we'll talk bracketology with Shelby Mast next.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. Have you written a book, learn how to get it published, and potentially sold online and at bookstores? Call Page Publishing now for your free book publishing kit, 800-215-6815, 800-215-6815. Shelby Mast joins us, bracketologist for USA Today. Talk some college hoops. Shelby, you slowed down from the Duke game yesterday, huh? What did you think of that one?
Ooh, I tell you what, that was something.
With those baskets, correct me if I'm wrong, those balls were like hovering in the cylinder, right? But they just couldn't get in the last second of that game. I couldn't believe it.
Well, Duke went through that a few weeks ago at home versus Wake Forest. Wake Forest had a shot to win the game and got a layup, and it just rolled around the rim. Time expired, and it fell off. And so that, I think they're a little bit blessed this year.
All right, so give me we got a lot of chalk going on in this tournament. Listen, Shelby, from your perspective, in the terms of the teams that are moving on, is this a good thing or a bad thing for the overall enjoyment of the tournament? Because people like Cinderella. I don't know how much they like Cinderella, but it doesn't seem to be one.
No, there's not one this year, and that's okay. We're used to having them. That makes it fun, but now we got some big boy games coming up this weekend. These should be really intense because once those Cinderellas get to the Sweet 16, it seems like the momentum and all the stuff they go through with the media, the spotlight shining on them, and then they go out and they play a clunker of a game. That doesn't always happen, but that's usually what happens. Well, we've got teams here now. I guess Oregon's the closest to Cinderella, but I hate putting the Power Five school with that title. I think we're going to have some solid games. There's not any that stand out as, oh, that one should be a blowout. Maybe UVA over Oregon. But other than that, I expect some really good games and some intense basketball, possibly our first buzzer beater.
Let's start with Tennessee, almost blowing a 25-point lead against Iowa. And the way Rick Barnes and this team, listen, I think it's a survive mentality. I don't care how you get to the Sweet 16. But does that linger with Tennessee as they go into this matchup with Purdue, is how they almost lost that game?
It very well could, because they came really, really close to having a historic lead gone away. I mean, it's funny, my CEO is from Iowa, and I was getting messages from him during that game, and at first it was like, come on, there's no chance here. And then it was like, uh-oh, there's a real chance here. But Iowa, it's one of those instances, you see that a lot in the tournament, where a team gets down big, they fight back and tie it, but they just don't have enough to get over the hump. And that's kind of how I felt. Even though it went to overtime, I just felt that Iowa just, they expended everything they had. Tennessee's got, Purdue has had a pretty easy road so far. They better be ready come Thursday or Friday. I don't know which night they play yet.
I liked what Bruce Pearl said about his Auburn team. He said, listen, we're better than Kansas. If you ask Bill Self, he would probably say the same thing. How good is Auburn playing right now?
They're playing really good. That's one of the bigger surprises for me. I felt that they were going to flame out first round, and they almost did. New Mexico State had a shot to win it at the buzzer and just missed. But, man, Auburn is looking really, really good. If they keep hitting their threes, they're a serious Final Four contender.
What is their biggest threat against a North Carolina team that seems to be pretty versatile in everything that they do?
Yeah, North Carolina is just overall a better team with better athletes and better players. Auburn has got to hit their shots against Carolina. If they're shooting less than what they have been, then this might be a stinker of a game.
All right, in terms of the way you look at the ACC, this Duke-Virginia Tech matchup, anything in the regular season, Shelby, that counts in this game? Anything that regular season that will pop up again in this game? I mean, how do you view a tournament game rather than when they met the Hokies before?
Well, when they met before, both teams were down a player. Duke was without Zion and Virginia Tech without Robinson. And Virginia Tech won that game. So now they both have their best player back. I think Duke is so much better with Zion, better than what Virginia Tech is with Robinson. But the fact that Virginia Tech beat them, they're going to have confidence going into that game. I expect that one to be a pretty tight game.
When you look at LSU, I was wondering about them with the loss of Will Wade. I mean, I know Tony Benford can coach, but I was wondering, look, I mean, do you rally around this? Is it a distraction? Is it a problem? It looked like in the SEC tournament it was. They may have gotten over that. Where do you see LSU in that matchup with Michigan State? Is LSU playing the kind of basketball like they did when they were looking really threatening before?
They look pretty good. I mean, they needed a last-second shot to win the game the other day, but they're playing good, better than I expected, actually. I picked them to go this far, but I wasn't confident with that pick. Just you're losing a coach is losing a key member of the team.
Yeah.
And yes, Benford has done well, but he hadn't done it. You know, he'd only done it two games prior, and they beat Vanderbilt and lost to Florida on a last-second shot. So you really didn't have a good sample size of what it would be like, and now he's won two. I think they're feeling a whole lot better now. As long as the media doesn't converge on the school or some announcement is made about Will Wade this week, I think they'll be ready for that game.
There's some people out there that will say, "Hey, Shelby, I don't pay attention to the AAC as much, and I don't really see Houston. I know a lot about Kentucky, but I don't see Houston." When you look at that matchup with the Cougars and how good that they are against Kentucky, who's again Kentucky, how do you view that? What you're going to see in Kansas City?
Kentucky needs P.J. Washington back. I don't know what his status is. He didn't play these first two games. Wofford was a good team. That was a good test for them without him. Had they had him in the lineup, I expect that to have been a much bigger margin. If they don't have P.J. Washington back, Houston can absolutely beat them. They can shoot the ball and they can defend.
Look at this. When you look at the way the Sweet 16 is, it's ones and fours and threes and twos. Is there anybody in the tournament right now that you're saying, hey, look, high seed is great, but they're playing with fire right now. They're playing with a danger. They're not playing as well as I thought that they would going in.
Well, I'm watching Gonzaga and Florida State. Both those teams are where I expected them to be. Florida State seems like they're playing a bit better. Plus, they beat Gonzaga last year to go to the Elite Eight, I believe it was. So this is a rematch. If Florida State's not going to be scared of them, I think Gonzaga is the better team. But that's going to be a fun game.
On the flip side, which team did you say, hey, man, they're coming into this tournament struggling. Maybe they need a little bit more of a kick. Something's not quite right. But, you know, tournament's a refresher. And now they're in the Sweet 16 and playing well.
Well, Texas Tech was one I was keeping my eye on. They lost first round of the Big 12 tournament to West Virginia, who had a poor season by their standards. That was one that I thought that, okay, they lose that game, that's going to just deflate all momentum. And, boy, they've been on a roll. They took care of Buffalo yesterday like nobody has done all year. That's a team that's a very dangerous team, and they're going against Michigan. That's another heavyweight battle. That's mostly what we have left.
Yeah. Shelby Mass joining us, bracketologist. Oregon is a 12. Is Oregon a legit 12, underseeded, overseeded?
They're a legit 12. Had they not won the Pac-12 tournament, they wouldn't even be here. Right. And they have proven they're pretty good. But, yeah, their regular season was not great. It wasn't horrible, but not good enough to get in the tournament. The committee even said that. They had to win that game to get in. Otherwise, they were headed for the NIT. But once you get in, anything can happen, and they've proven that.
Do they have anything offensively that – I mean, Virginia's defense is so stout. Do they have anything offensively that can help them with this?
I wouldn't expect them to have anything, but I didn't really expect them to be where they are right now either. So they seem to be finding a way. But I think Virginia, they've gotten over that hump, that first game against Gardner-Webb when they got down 14. You know memories from last year were seeping in, and they bounced back and got a big double-digit win and then won pretty handily yesterday. I think UVA is on a mission right now, and I don't think Oregon's going to stand in the way.
Oh, you're the good guy to ask this question because Virginia got there by beating Oklahoma. And Ron and I were talking last week. We're not sure how Oklahoma got into the tournament. How did Oklahoma get into the tournament? Not only that, but get a 9 seed.
Oklahoma, their non-conference strength of schedule is one of the best in the land. They had enough good wins early before conference play. But I think the key thing for them is, you know, they've got this quad system that the committee uses. And you talked about quad 1, 2, 3, 4 wins and losses. They didn't even play a quad 4 game. And I think that helped them immensely. I may have even bumped them up a seed line. I felt they were going to be a 9 seed, and I got that one right. But the fact that they didn't play and they had enough good wins and a tough enough schedule, playing 0 quad 4 games, you got to try really hard to get that distinction. And no other team in America had that. So that was that. I think that was a big part of it.
This is why we have you on, Shelby. That's fantastic. That's great information. That's what we were looking for. By the way, is it getting more and more complicated with the new ways people are doing it? We were talking about this the lady who was the AD at NC State, Yao. She was saying, listen, here's why NC State should have been in, and she listed all these rankings and all these formulas and whatnot, and I think it gets lost on the average college basketball fan. Is it more complicated to figure this out now?
I don't think so. I think the committee has laid it out for years. Who did you play? Where did you play them? How did you do? North Carolina State didn't measure up to any team that was an at-large team in this tournament. They weren't close for me. They weren't close for the committee. Well, unless you consider 5 teams out close. But they really didn't play a tough enough. They played the worst non-conference in the history of college basketball. The committee harps on that. Challenge yourself out of conference because those are the games you can control. And when you're the worst in the history of college basketball, you're doing yourself no favors. The committee has left teams out or dropped teams a seed line or two because of playing such a bad non-conference. They beat Auburn. That's a nice win. And they beat Syracuse. That's it. They had nothing else good on their resume. And I that fan base this year was on me so much.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't have them seated, or have them in the tournament or even really that close. And they kept saying, look, we played 5 games against teams that are 1 seed. Well, yeah, you did, but you lost them all. Had you won one, then maybe we're talking something different here. But they just didn't have enough. And you can put whatever stat you want out there, but look at the teams you played. When you're playing 8 teams that are ranked 280 or worse, that's just not good enough.
Excellent stuff. By the way, Duke, in that loss, you go up against a 7'6" guy. I mean, all bets are off. But is there any vulnerability to Duke? Did you see anything in Duke's that makes you think maybe this is a little shaky team going in now where the competition gets better?
Yeah, their three-point shooting is one of the worst in the land, and their free-throw shooting is not nearly as good as it should be for a team that good that gets to the line a lot. It's rare for a Duke team to be bad at three-point shooting and bad at free throws. But that being said, Zion might be the man that can get them past that where all those stats don't matter. He is such a force, as we saw yesterday.
Absolutely. Shelby Maskin, Bracketologist USA Today, stopping by to give us a little analysis of what we're seeing so far as we head to the Sweet 16. Always good talking to you, my friend.
Yep, thanks for having me.
You got it, Shelby Mask. Good stuff. All right, so he set the stage on Oklahoma, Ron. I like that. I was glad I remembered that question from last week because I kind of didn't really figure it out on my own how the Sooners got in. Not only that, as a 9 seed. I liked what he said. He goes, that's where I had him the whole time. That's why he's a bracketologist. I got to learn to go to school for that, figure out how that works. Did any of that make sense? They didn't play any quad 4 teams.
Nope. That was, I'm glad you brought up, what's her name?
Oh, Debbie Yao, I think.
Yeah.
Deborah Yao.
Something like that. Because, I mean, that's something she would have brought up.
Exactly.
She would have brought up the fact that they had a really great strength of quad 4 schedule, or is that how you use it? I don't even know how the proper way to use it.
Can I just tell you something? This sounds like a movie where, like, it reminds me of here's a better example. Instead of it reminds me of a movie, I'll give you a movie that it reminds me of. Remember the movie Twister?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember how the guy from Princess Bride, Cary Elwes,
yep,
the character? He had all the advanced science stuff, right? Remember, he had all the corporate sponsors and he had the computers and the lasers and all that stuff.
And the perfect cars.
Yes,
each vehicle
the cars.
Was brand spanking new.
But the other team, they had Billy, right? And Billy knew what a storm was thinking.
Yep.
Like, he would just go out and be like, he'd put his finger up in the wind. He'd be like, a storm's going that way. And but the other team, they had advanced computers, but they'd follow Billy because Billy knew where he wanted.
He just would look at the clouds and go, turn right here.
Exactly.
Right here, right here.
Exactly. That's what I feel like with college basketball. Like, now you've got all of these computers. Doesn't it still come down to, nah, they stink? Like, doesn't it come down to that? It doesn't come down to that anymore.
It just comes down to
just what he said. He said that perfectly. He's like, we played 5 number ones, quad one teams. Yeah, you lost all of them. What do you want? What do you want from me?
Need quad maybe, four.
If you won one, we'd have a conversation, but you didn't. Like, that's what it comes down to, right? Well, my analytics says we 7.6534 on the Richter. Nah, you lost by 15. Like, it just... That's the way I think. Like, there's these old college basketball guys going, nah, I don't like it. That's it. That's what you want. I don't know if I want 15 computers and sleek cars going down the Oklahoma highway chasing a tornado. I think I just want the old guys going, nah, you're not good. Okay, we're not good. Then move on. SB Nation AM, it's SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Shelby Mast, bracketologist, on the Sweet 16. If you like chalk, as I said earlier, you love this. Did you know there's one bracket left that's perfect?
Really?
Yeah, but that... Shouldn't there be more? Let's be honest. Has there really been anything that would cause a majority of the country to be out of a perfect bracket?
Irvine.
Yeah, that's probably right. You're probably right, Irvine. That was kind of a big deal.
But that person picked Irvine and Ohio State?
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
That's impressive. Well, wait. It was Ohio State, right? No, it was Oregon. Yeah,
they say that Irvine and Oregon. They say getting a perfect bracket to the Sweet 16 though is still in the trillions. So, I mean,
should get something for that.
That's what I keep saying. Like, can I, and listen, I don't want to knock anybody's perfect bracket contest, but if you're not offering $1 billion, like, the odds are heavily against you. Like, $1 million isn't even close to the odds of getting a perfect bracket. Isn't getting a perfect bracket in the quadrillions,
yes,
if not more than that? Of getting a perfect bracket? Obviously, you can't offer a quadrillion dollars. You'd break the country apart. But still, win $1 million. If you want $1 million after taxes, you're like, I should have accomplished more with this.